Thanks for listening to the Drummer's Weekly Groovecast. You can contact the show at twitter.com/DW Groovecast and through Facebook at facebook.com/Drummer's Weekly Groovecast.
Good evening.
I am warning you right now, if you touch my drums, I will stab you in the neck with a knife.
Ain't it fucking. Ain't it fucking.
Mom!
Take it easy. Lower it.
I'm not going to lower it. I have to do this now.
I don't mind you playing it, but lower it.
We get straight out?
No, we had a problem. I mean, we tried to do everything we could.
What do you mean?
Well, you know what I mean.
Nice! Little trouble there. You're rushing.
Yeah, well, you know, that's just like your opinion, man.
Yeah!
Hello, folks. You're listening to a very happy Phil today. Doesn't take much to derive where the happiness comes from. Just got back from our trip down to the Gretsch factory in Ridgeland, South Carolina, and it was great on all fronts. Just wonderful. John and I had talked about reaching out to the folks down there and seeing if they might want to do a little something on our show. And when we got the official invite, it was hard to keep this show secret because we know that if you got any blood pumping through your drumming veins, you're pretty much a fan of Gretsch. Let me tell you, the folks down in Ridgeland did not disappoint, as you'll hear on the podcast when we get into it, speaking with Paul. He's one of the most upbeat, one of the most positive fellas that you will ever meet. And he's a firm believer in putting that good mojo, those good vibes into making drums. And that includes hiring his folks that help him out down there. So we had the proverbial red carpet rolled out for us. We were treated like guests of honor by, of course, Paul and all of the employees down there. And we could not be more appreciative. Before we jump into the show, I've got a few really important pieces of information to get across to you folks today, and I'm going to go ahead and tease it by saying, make sure you listen all the way through. Don't skip over to the interview just yet, because we're going to give away free stuff, and yeah, that means you got a shot to win some free stuff, so hang on. I'm going to get to the details on that shortly, but first, I want to talk just a bit about this Gretsch trip and this interview that we're going to do momentarily. I want to set it up for you. First off, if you haven't been down there before, I want to paint a little bit of a picture of what you're going to be walking into, or what we actually walked into. Now, to be totally upfront and transparent, I will say this. This is not my first time being down there. I had the pleasure of seeing the Gretsch factory about 16, 17 years ago, much shorter time or much shorter visit that first time than I got a few days ago when John and I went down there. John and I spent half a day in the factory in meeting with Paul. But my first trip, like I said, 16, 17 years ago or so, I was actually a performer at the Jazz Corner, which is a pretty well-renowned jazz club in Hilton Head, South Carolina. And just on a flyer, I thought, why not swing by the Gretsch factory? I mean, I had the drums on the bandstand at the club. I mean, I got street cred, right? So myself and the bassist decided to take a little road trip. It was about 30 miles or so, I believe, from Hilton Head. So we headed inland and went over and made a surprise visit. And Paul, who barely remembered that visit, was kind enough to give us a 50-cent tour of the building at that time, which has since then, we'll call it, bloomed into maturity, even though the company's been around for 100-some-odd years. I don't know that they've ever done more business than they're doing now. But anyway, again, to set up kind of what we're talking about here, Ridgeland is your prototypical deep southern coastal sort of town. So I'm painting this Norman Rockwell for you here. You go through this little town of Ridgeland. You make a turn onto Gray's Highway. You go through a residential district, homes on one side, schools on the other, and out of nowhere pops this large, pale yellow building with the Gretsch iconic drum logo on it. I mean, across the street, man, it's houses, churches, next door school. It's really almost kind of a surreal looking type thing, because you would think of it maybe being in some kind of an industrial park, but it's not. It's in a neighborhood. And, you know, you walk in the door and it is drum nirvana. I mean, you smell fresh wood, lacquer. I mean, what else would you want from a drum company, right? So we met Paul, walked into his office, or we were escorted into his office, and he gave us about an hour and a half step-by-step tour of the factory. It was something that I wish that we could have videotaped for you. Quite honestly, it's probably too long. And realistically, you know, there's a lot of company secrets that would get caught on tape. So I completely understand also why you would not, being a Gretsch employee or a Gretsch owner, you would certainly not want these industry secrets getting out there. But the long and the short of it is, we got in there, we saw everything from where the raw shells were being stored, ready for finishing. We saw where you cut the shells to depth, where they sand like crazy. We saw hand staining of the lacquered drums. We saw the sealing of lacquered drums, the actual nitrocellulose lacquer being applied, more sanding and more sanding, wet sanding. We saw some drilling. We saw badges being installed on drums. We saw bearing edges being sanded, waxed, and burnished. Lugs being put on drums, mounting hardware being put on drums, all the way to the point of putting drum heads on them, tuning them up, being inspected and tested for play, and eventually wrapped and boxed and put on pallets ready to head out to eager drummers all over the world. I mean, it really was crazy. It absolutely was just fantastic. And so after that, we spent another hour with Paul in his office. We closed the doors and we asked questions. And let me tell you, we had quite a few questions of our own. And we also had some questions from a few friends and some listeners that knew that we were going to make that trip as well. There's a lot of, we'll call them rumors, that we asked him. And they were, let me tell you, nothing, and I mean nothing, was brushed off. He was forthright on all the answers. And let me go ahead and say that we did spend a fairly significant amount of time discussing the new partnership. And by new, we mean a couple of years, partnership with Drum Workshop. And again, Paul was very forthright in his answers on all of that regarding DW. And I'll give you a little sneak peek. Gretsch fans, have no fear. That's all I'm going to say. All right. Now, one other quick little note, and then we're going to talk about our giveaway that we have coming up. When John and I made it into Ridgeland, we got there right around lunchtime, so we decided that we would stop and have a bite to eat before we got to the factory, because we knew that when we got to the factory that there would be no holes barred, man. We were going to spend as much time in there as we were going to be allowed, and so we wanted to have a bite of lunch prior to that. Well, we stopped into the Wild Hog Barbecue Shop. I'm going to give a little shout out to those folks there. Thanks, guys. When we walked in there, we placed our order, and I just off the cuff, I just said to the nice lady who was taking the order, if I said the word Gretsch to you, does it mean anything? And her eyes perked up, and she goes, yeah, that's the drum company down the street. And I said, well, do you know anything about those folks down there? She goes, well, I really don't know much, but I know they do, you know, quite a few things for the community. And I said, well, I would like for you to know that this fellow standing next to me and myself, we're professional drummers, been playing for years and years and years. And we want you to know that they make what is respected to be the finest drums in the business. And I mean, folks all over the world love Gretsch drums, collect Gretsch drums, play Gretsch drums. And that surprised her a tad bit. Then one of the cooks came out of the kitchen and he goes, "Doesn't surprise me at all. These folks have been here for over 30 years and we know about their reputation," or at least he knew about their reputation. So the folks in Ridgeland were also aware of the contributions that the Gretsch Drum Company has made to our percussive history. And as a side note, we told them we were interviewing the folks over there and doing a walkthrough for the show. And they were so nice. They gave us some free food. We got some free pie at the end of the meal. So big shout out. Big thanks to the Southern Hospitality, to the folks down at Wild Hog Barbecue. Thanks again. All right. We're going to delay the gratification just a tad bit longer, but we're going to tell you how each and every one of you guys can be winners. Yes, winners. We're doing the first Drummers Weekly Groovecast giveaway. We're going to do this giveaway sometime in April. I don't want to pin ourselves down exactly to the drawing date on this. We'll actually pinpoint that down just a tad bit more over the next couple of weeks, but needless to say, you're going to have plenty of time to register, and you're asking yourself, well, first off, what do I win? And second off, how do I register? Well, here's your answer, folks. We're going to have two prizes. Yes, not one, but two prizes. And these two prizes, we are even going to allow the winner, the first person that we draw, to have choice on what they want. And so here are the two prizes. Prize number one is a Peisty 20 10-inch splash. So there you go, a Peisty 20 series 10-inch splash. And prize number two is a brand new Gretsch drums t-shirt. So very apropos for the podcast as well, right? Now you're going to ask yourself, well, how do I enter said contest? Here's how you enter the contest. You have to point your little finger and your web browser towards iTunes. You go into iTunes and you find our show, the Drummers Weekly Groovecast, and then you leave a written review. That's what you do. Your iTunes ID is your entrance into this contest. What we will do is we will then draw from the names who are showing up on the Drummers Weekly Groovecast review page, and winner number one gets his choice of either the symbol or the t-shirt. Winner number two gets whatever winner number one doesn't want. So it's sort of a little bit of like a Price is Right, you know, kind of thing. Like the first person in the showcase lets the other person pretty much have the showcase he doesn't want. But needless to say, we want to leave that option open to you. So again, point yourself over to iTunes, go to the Drummers Weekly Groovecast podcast page, and leave a written review. Don't just click the stars, leave a written review, and then you will be automatically entered into this drawing. Now, let me say this. For those of you who have already left reviews, you're going, oh my gosh, how am I going to get in on this? You're already in on it. Surprise! So if you've already left a review, you don't have to do anything else. You don't. But we will make that drawing sometime in mid-April. So as long as you get your review in by mid-April, you're going to be good to go. Then the last thing that I would like to say about the contest is that we are indeed limiting the winners to folks who are inside of the continental U.S. I know it's a little bit of a bummer for some of our folks over in Europe and Asia and everywhere else, but shipping is a bit expensive over there. So anyway, don't let that dampen your spirits for leaving us a review, though. There's our intro into the Gretsch Drum Factory Tour and also our first Drummers Weekly Groovecast Contest. All right, well, enough of my inane blabbering. To set up our interview with Paul, why not listen to some Gretsch drums, right? And if you're going to listen to Gretsch drums, I mean, why not listen to some Art Blakey, right? So let's get this thing started. Let's listen to some Art Blakey playing some great Gretsch drums. Hear that great Gretsch sound with Horace Silver's trio playing the tune, Yeah. John, when you were growing up, did you ever like that movie Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory?
I loved that. Like that book too. I read that book 1,000 times.
Man, not only am I living the movie right now, I'm writing and reading that book as well.
I get it. It's a little dream come true.
It is, man. I'm as happy as a little girl right now.
I know you are. Let me move over.
You know, we've been teasing our listening audience that we were going to have a little special for them. And we told them we were going to go on the road.
Yep.
And we're on the road today.
We are.
We're in a new studio.
It was a very pleasant little drive.
It was.
Where we tried to contain our excitement but failed miserably.
Some of you who are Facebook friends of ours have probably seen a sneak preview picture that we posted.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah. But the cat's out of the bag now.
Here we have it. Let's go.
Yeah. Folks, let me tell you where we're broadcasting from today. We are in the small town of Ridgeland, South Carolina. And for you drum aficionados, that's already enough introduction for you.
They got it.
Yeah, you got it. But for those of you who are still wondering, where are those two idiots at? These two idiots are sitting in the Gretsch Drum Factory in Ridgeland, South Carolina. We are at the Mecca of American-made drums, in my opinion.
I couldn't agree more.
Yeah. And sitting across the table from us is Mr. Gretsch Guru, the factory manager, Mr. Paul Cooper. Paul, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks a lot, guys. I'm glad to be here.
Man, we couldn't be happier that you have allowed us to come in, set up shop, and talk about drums.
Gretsch drums.
That's true.
Well, I'm not quite so used to having all this electronic stuff in my office here, but I'll put up with it.
It's going to be just fine, man. Let me tell you, before we actually hit record, Paul was so kind to us. He invited us into the factory. We got to see all different aspects of how the drums are manufactured. Everything, I mean, from when the shells come in to when the finished drums are getting boxed up and getting ready to head out to whatever store or whatever endorser is going to play them. I mean, it's been amazing.
It's beyond my expectations. Thank you, Paul.
Yeah,
you're very welcome, man.
Most of our listeners, Paul, realize that John and I are longtime Gretsch players, and we've done a couple of shows where we've talked about the different gear that we play and whatnot. And I mean, my mother bought my first set of Gretsch drums back in 1989, when I think they were pretty much only stocked at like Modern Drum Shop in New York and right. Explorers Percussion out in Kansas City. I got mine in New York at Modern Drum Shop. So this is, again, one of those pilgrimages for us. I mean, this is a great deal, so we really do appreciate it. So the first thing, we want to ask a couple of background questions about just where we're sitting right now. Paul, when did this factory in Ridgeland open up and start production?
Well, Mr. Gretsch moved the business here in 84 after he bought the company from Baldwin, and it's been here ever since. And he also had Slingerland here for a few years. So, you know, they've built a lot of drums in this building.
All my drums were built here.
Thousands of mine, for sure.
Yeah. So, Paul, this company has gone through a lot of changes over the years. At current state, how many folks work here?
We've got 19 people here at the moment.
Yeah. I remember, I think we were talking a little bit earlier. At one time, there was only like half a dozen or so.
Yeah, we actually had 7 people here for a number of years.
Right. And when did you start working
here? I started here in 1998. And I actually started in Fred's office, in Mr. Gretsch's office. I was a salesperson. I did that for the first probably 10 months I worked for the company.
Yeah.
And my job was obviously to sign dealers. So when I started, Gretsch had a handful of dealers in the United States, no more than probably 10 or 12. Mm-hmm. And after about 10 months of calling people and talking about Gretsch, we were up in the 40s. And shortly thereafter, Mr. Gretsch had me come up to the factory, and I kind of almost refused to leave because I liked it so much here.
Yeah. So where was the office that you were at with Mr. Gretsch?
It was in Pooler, Georgia, just right outside of Savannah.
Gotcha. Does that office still exist
there? Yeah, he's still there. Yeah.
Gotcha. Yeah. Okay. We just drove through Pooler.
We did.
Yeah.
Did we?
Yeah, we did.
Okay.
Yeah.
I saw a Pooler police officer that graciously passed us with his lights on instead of stopping us.
So well, I didn't consider that a first.
I was, yeah. I was a little, I wasn't concerned with where we were.
Yeah. So, what line, Gretsch has got several lines of drums that are out. What lines are made in this factory?
Well, here in Ridgeland, we mm-hmm. build the USA Custom drums. In 2012, we started building the Brooklyn drums here.
Mm-hmm.
And then in 2014, we started the three-ply broadcaster kits. So we currently make those three lines here.
Right. So these are the high-level, professional-level drums
right.
that are made here. Excellent. What is the general delivery time from the time you guys get an order in, say, from a dealer? And, John, you said you wanted to ask him about like a seven-piece kit, right?
Yeah, what's you know, with no one being held to the fire.
Well, in general, our current delivery time is anywhere from 8 to 12 weeks, depending upon what finish it is and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Awesome. And also, just give us, we saw it in person, and you don't have to go into incredible detail of the actual steps, but Paul, just in general, tell our listeners kind of like the bare bones basics of the order of how things are put together. Like we have the raw shell that comes right. in to when the drum goes in the box.
Well, we pull the raw shells and we always build everything a kit at a time. It's not like we build your bass drum one day and your snare drum the next. So all the drums go in a drum set, go through the process together. First, we'll go through the wood shop. That'll take generally a day to get the drums sanded and ready for staining.
Mm-hmm.
After they come out of the wood shop, we'll go back to the spray room where we'll do the staining. Staining general takes a full day. Then we start doing the lacquer. If it's a satin lacquer kit, it could be 6 to 7 days time in the spray room. If it's a gloss kit, it's generally a lot longer, more like 10 to 12 to sometimes even 14, 15 days. Once it's out of the spray room, we go and if it's lacquer, if a gloss lacquer, we would end up having to wet sand it and buff it, then take it to drilling. If it's satin lacquer, it goes straight to drilling. If it's a nitron kit, it goes straight to drilling. And then from drilling, go to the assembly area. So all in all, the actual production time on a kit can be anywhere from really 3 to 5 weeks, something like that.
You know, one of the things that we got to see that it's amazing to me the amount of labor that goes in, especially from the sanding aspect, the amount of sanding that's done on the kits. Anybody who ever complains about the price of one of these sets should see how one of these things, how a kit is made, you know, from the standpoint of like just how much actual hands-on sanding, the amount of time and the amount of craftsmanship, just everything from the amount of pressure that you use on a piece of sandpaper.
Right.
You know, it is absolutely astounding to me.
Yeah,
I mean, we
actually use a ton of sandpaper here, as you can well imagine.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, you know, it's like if you work at the Gretsch factory, you better like sawdust and lacquer dust because you're going to see a lot of it.
Yeah.
Well, I think also the, you know, when you say hand sanded, but realizing it's handcrafted. In my opinion, watching, you know, taking us through the process, just about everything is, you know, it's not automated in much of any way. And that to me just makes these drums even more special.
Well, yeah, we try to adhere to the same processes that Gretsch used in the early 60s. And that's kind of what the drums are all about at this point. You know, our kits aren't done by machines for the most part. I mean, we do have machinery that's operated by people, but there's really a lot of handwork involved in it, in just about everything we do.
Yeah, it's almost like at every step we saw, there was a hand on the drum.
Yeah.
You know, and that's amazing. I love that. And it makes things just talk about having a kit built, how personal it is. And you even mentioned, you know, like,
yeah, you got to think positive thoughts when you're building drums.
Yeah,
because
that is incredible.
You know, it's like
right?
you want to put that positive mojo on it, and hopefully that'll come out with the end user.
That is gold.
We've talked about between ourselves and on the show that we feel like that there's there's something about Gretsch drums. There's a particular vibe to them. I mean, there is a vibe to these drums that, just to be honest, is not present with a lot of foreign-made drums. There's a certain vibe to it. And one of the things that I think that's part of that vibe is also something like, I want our listeners to look at some of the pictures that we're going to post on our page. We will, in particular, post a picture of one drill press. There's a press out there that's been used for over, it's over 50 years,
yeah, it was
right, Paul?
Since the early 50s.
Yeah, that every, and we mean every Gretsch drum that's been made at this factory or that's been made in the last 50 years has, the drums were drilled on that press. So if you own a set of drums up until...
Well, that machine was in heavy use up until 2012.
Yeah, every drum was drilled on that machine.
Every iconic drum set you've heard and seen from your favorite Gretsch drummers.
Yeah, so Tony Williams' drums were drilled on there. Elvin Jones' drums.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
So that is fascinating, man. I could just sit here and talk about that drill press now for 30 minutes.
Yeah, well, believe me, I've spent a lot of time with that drill press.
Yeah,
taking it apart, putting it back together, and fixing it, breaking it, and fixing it again. You know.
Yeah. I mean, it's just astounding to me. I'm still kind of in awe of a drill press.
Yeah, that was a special piece. You can even tell with Paul, you know, there's just some reverence there.
Yeah, actually, not too long ago, one of my guys took a lot of our old machinery like that, when back in the day when you, a nut stripped or something, you'd end up grabbing a drum part to use to replace the regular nuts. So this machine happened to have some old Slingerland wing nuts on it. And one of my guys thought he'd modify it a little bit, so he sanded part of the wing nuts off. And a couple days later, I was over at the machine. I was like, what in the hell has happened here? Who in the hell did this? And so my guy was, he thought I was really angry. And I wasn't angry at all. But it was, you know, you just can't mess with the old mojo like that. So
Yeah. I know when we first got here, I know we probably just, to Paul, we looked high. Like, we're just like, we're here. And
he, you guys still look that way.
Yeah. He kind of, well, we are. Yeah. But he kind of flippantly said, I'm just so numb to it here. And I think in some ways I saw too much of that not being the case, because we're standing there at that drill press and you're just looking at it like we are, like, this piece is amazing. You see it every day, but there's still magic in it for you.
I definitely hold that particular machine in reverence because it's, it's just an old classic drilling machine. I'm not sure there's many more like it around.
Probably not.
Yeah.
But I just think that, don't sell yourself short. You still feel.
Oh, every day. I love coming here.
Yeah. It's obvious. And we love that. That's cool to see.
I think your employees like their jobs too.
Well, about half the people here are drummers.
Yeah.
And the other half have been here for a long time and they've come to know drums. You know, I'm out there preaching drum stuff to them 24/7, so they're used to it.
Well, I'm sure that they've seen a whole host of pie-eyed drummers like ourselves come through here from time to time to tour the factory, you know?
Yeah, people's eyes get a little glazed over when they walk in.
Yeah. If you don't mind, tell some of our folks about some of the endorsers that have toured this factory.
Well, we've had Cindy Blackman's been here. As a matter of fact, the second week I worked for Gretsch, Vinny came here. Mm-hmm. And so I got to meet him in 98, the second week that I'd actively worked for Gretsch. That was really cool. Ferroni's been here. Steve's been here maybe three times, something like that. Stanton Moore's been here. I can't think of the others, but we don't get a lot of visitation because of where we're at. But one time we had an Aerosmith tour bus pull up here.
That's awesome.
Some people in Ridgeland thought it was actually the band. Well, that was like visiting the factory, but it was actually just a bus driver who was here to pick up a guitar. So.
Well, it's probably worth noting to the listeners that with where this factory is, you've got to really want to come to the Gretsch factory.
Yeah.
If you're coming here, because it's really the closest airport that it would be to would probably be Savannah's airport.
Savannah. We're 30 miles away from Savannah.
Yeah. So, and we know the way that a lot of major tours are routed these days, you got to really want to come through here if that's
yeah,
the
they'll hit Atlanta or yeah. Jacksonville or Charleston.
Right. Yeah. So, Paul, one thing that I want to talk to you about, because you're such a major player in, we'll call it the reemergence of Gretsch. But back during like the 80s and 90s, when Gretsch was maybe not quite as high profile, they were still around. They were still making drums, making great drums at that time. Do you feel like that the company learned anything, or did they take anything away from kind of what the imported Japanese drums? Because they pretty much took over like Yamaha and Tom and Pearl in the 80s.
Well, you know, just my opinion on that, it really is that at that time, really, Gretsch, and it's still true today in some respects, that we're real slow to change. You know, we like to do things the old way. And I think at that period of time in the industry, a lot of the imported kits came out, and they just actually had better hardware. Mm-hmm. They were more functional drums. And I think at the same time, the general public was really starting to be taught what drums were. You mm-hmm. know, like people were talking about bearing edges and, oh, memory locks, and all those types of things were happening. And people became enamored with that. And Gretsch really was slow to change on the hardware, you know, quite frankly.
Right.
If you look at, we didn't start using a standard fold-down spur until maybe 2000.
Yeah.
So, you know, when I first got here, we would make drum sets. People would order them without spurs because they'd want a different spur than we offered at the time. So.
Well, that kind of segues into something when you said slow to change. In a lot of ways, I kind of love that, because not long ago when I was thinking about, you know, coming down here and what we're going to talk about, I realized in the major American drum companies, and we'll talk Gretsch, Ludwig, Slingelin, Rogers, for example, or for the most part, one thing that's fascinating to me is every one of those other companies changed massively by way of their shell construction, their hardware, right. their all that. And the one thing that I love about Gretsch is it really for 60 years hasn't changed, yep. other than maybe an edge profile, some hardware, but the actual core of that drum is the same. And I think that speaks volumes to, you know, oh, we didn't get it up on the hardware, whatever, but still, man, at the end of the day, the shell, the construction, the design is what makes the drum.
Well, yeah, and so I think for me, the most identifiable thing about a Gretsch drum is the sound.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think whether it was on purpose or by accident, the fact that, you know, since the mid-50s, the shell formula has been the same.
Mm-hmm.
The die-cast soups, the edges, the silver sealer, all those ingredients in there really haven't changed. And that's what it's been about for us. Whereas a lot of other companies, they would change for things going on in the marketplace or whatever.
Trends.
You know, yeah. And Gretsch was never like that. So, you know, in the long term, it's been really a great thing for us, because our sound, it's identifiable. Mm-hmm. You hear a Gretsch drum, you can tell it's a Gretsch drum. And I do think that a lot of people really dig that sound. I know I do.
I know I do. and it is true. I mean, a Rogers kit from the 60s and a Rogers kit from the 80s, completely different animals.
Right.
Whereas the idea of keeping, you know, staying the course is, kudos to you guys, man.
Well, you know,
it's not broke.
I've got Gretsch drums from the 40s, the 50s, the 60s, 70s, 80s. I've got a lot of Gretsch drums.
Mm-hmm.
And even though some of them have different materials in them, it's always amazing to me how there is an identifiable sound with all of them. And I think that's really what people dig about Gretsch drums.
No doubt.
Well, that's the perfect segue into, even during the time when we'll say Gretsch had a little lower profile, one of the things that has stayed consistent is the loyalty of drummers to Gretsch drums, because to my knowledge, I really don't know anybody, any professional drummer that at one time or another either hasn't owned a Gretsch drum or they still own them. In other words, pretty much everybody I know has owned Gretsch drums. Which leads me into the question of, there was a lack of high-profile endorsers for a while. Like, I remember looking through Modern Drummer back in the 80s, and pretty much the only endorsers you would see would be like Phil Collins would be on there, or you'd see Harvey Mason, or Mark Trebé from Survivor.
Right.
But there were a lot of guys that endorsed other companies that played Gretsch at that time. So it kind of stayed that way for a while, right, until really about the time you started taking over, or you started doing working for Gretsch. Did you or did someone at that time make a major push to go, look, we know there's a lot of guys out there that are using our drums, especially in the studio. We need to reach out to these folks, and we need to build our artist roster up, because there was a significant, you know, new presence of artist endorsers around the turn of the century.
Right. Well, you know, in the early 2000s, that's when KMC Command became our distributor. And when that happened, they had their artist rep, Kim Graham, who was already doing artist rep for some of their other brands. Well, the focus became on, in some ways, she brought a lot of new artists at that time. And, you know, a few years prior to that, I guess it was in maybe 96 or 97, early 98, is when Vinny actually came out and came to Gretsch, because he was always playing Gretsch anyways, even while he was endorsing another brand. Mm-hmm. And so there was some movement. I don't know that it was Gretsch actively pursuing that, or it was just something that happened. You know, we became in vogue again, and people wanted to play, you know, come out and play Gretsch rather than just playing in the studio and endorsing another brand. And I think also KMC, because of their size, was able to give tour support maybe better than they could have gotten prior to that.
Right. That was certainly that was a knock on Gretsch. Yeah. I know, with friends of mine that were on the road, you know, they might do a fly date to do Letterman and come back. Yeah. Certain companies just had readily available kits, and there were some companies that just didn't have the ability to do that. But are you guys a lot more covered in that sense, like
Absolutely. We in the last few years, we have built so many kits for backline companies literally all over the world, and we're positioned real well at the moment.
That's great to hear.
We've mainly been talking about all the kits that are made right here at, you know, in the factory. But now we know there's a whole host of we'll call them semi-professional, and even, I guess you might even call beginner line sets as well. Do you have any say-so with those?
Well, you know, our current ownership, DW, has a really excellent system for product development and those types of things, and that it's done by committee. And I'm lucky enough to be on those meetings. So I would say they're smart in the fact that, you know, they don't just let one person do that. It's by committee. Everybody talks it over. There's pros and cons discussed, that kind of thing. But in general, the product that's been made overseas, in the last 10 years, you've seen where there was too many different lines, maybe not enough lines. You know, to get that mix right, I think, is always a challenge.
What would you say is the biggest challenge for the consistency aspect of putting out the higher-end drums?
Well, that's an excellent question, actually. And the consistency challenge is the people. It's not so much the drums, it's the people. Because, you know, everybody has good days and bad days, and a lot of what we do is by hand. So really having people that are motivated enough to enjoy what they do and really look at what they're doing and stay on top of that is the biggest thing. And just like when the guys in the wood shop send stuff to the spray room, well, they check it out. When the ladies in the spray room send something to the next area, well, they're checking it out. So it's really a matter of everybody, you know, we don't just inspect drums at the end. You inspect them when they go from one process to the next. And that's key to having any kind of consistency in your product.
Yeah. And, you know, with this being the smaller size operation that it is, you work into all these variables, I'm sure, of also from time to time. I mean, where you literally, if you have a couple people that get sick, you know, at that time, I mean, it can put a little bit of a hitch, you know, in the production line, I'm sure, at that time.
Well, you know, we do have a small operation, but people are really cross-trained very well here. If somebody's out, somebody's going to pick up that slack. And, you know, whether it's me or Josh, we can generally cover whatever's going on. And, you know, most of my other people are pretty flexible as well. So we've really learned to do that over the years.
Good stuff. That I know I asked you, like, can you do all of this? And you kind of, well, yeah,
well, sometimes you have to. I don't like to boast or anything.
No, man, that's
I've done really, just about every operation here over the years, yeah.
Well, it's good to know it intimately when you have other people you're overseeing. I want to get into a few myths of Gretsch. There's been, you know, there's just chatter all the time about a million things.
Because I've never heard any chatter. I don't know. What are you talking
about,
chatter?
Sure you haven't. Anyway, no, there was, you know, it's always something. There's always the experts, blah, blah, blah. But just getting your take on a few things. One is, you know, the long-standing oversized shell thing. Like in the 60s, there's guys that are saying, oh, the shells are too big. Right. They couldn't put wrap on, you know, because the heads would be too tight.
Yeah, that's true. And even if, you know, even drums older than the 60s, a lot of them are even more oversized and difficult to get heads on. But really, since we went to a 6-ply maple gum shell in the mid-50s, that shell was a 16th of an inch oversized compared to everybody else at the industry at that time and remained that way really up until a few years ago.
Now, was there a reason for it?
You know, I couldn't tell you. Whenever they went to Jasper initially, that was just the diameter. It might have even been that was Jasper's mold's diameter. I really don't know the story on that one.
Okay.
Our listeners would kill me if I didn't ask this. What do you feel like is the purpose of the silver sealer?
Well, I'm not supposed to talk about silver sealer, but I will.
All right.
You don't have to tell us what's in it.
Well, you know, right.
I'm back here twisting
I'm
his arm.
I'm not a historian.
Yeah.
But I stayed at Holiday Inn Express, okay? But, you know, Gretsch started using that silver sealer in the mid-50s, and it was kind of an in vogue thing to do at the time. Other drum companies were painting the inside of their shells. And I think just by chance, Gretsch chose that particular product that has some reflective qualities in it. And I think the fact that that's silver's in there and that it's not perfectly smooth has a lot to do with what it does for the drum shell.
Right. I know that one thing that we talked briefly about that I think is key as well is that we were saying that when you play Gretsch drums, there's something about the sound that comes back to you that is very different from other drums. And so, yeah, I can definitely see that. Yeah.
Well, we always joke here at the factory. We say, well, you don't play Gretsch drums, they play you.
Yeah.
And we say that primarily because from where I sit anyways, when I'm sitting behind a Gretsch kit, the tone comes back, it seems to come back at you more than on some other kits.
I completely agree. I mean, you know, without even any detail whatsoever, you can hear that. Yeah. You can feel it and hear it.
Yeah, and that's part of that whole thing of the feel of playing Gretsch drums too. The combination of that and of course the die cast hoops.
Yeah, the die cast hoops, the edge, the silver, the shell composition, all those things.
Yeah. Paul, also now this long predates you as well, but another one of the kind of mystical things about the smaller toms, like the 10s and the 12s, is they have 5 lugs instead of 6. Is there any particular reason that you're aware of why Gretsch decided to go that route?
Well, you know, I've never actually been told this, but my guess would be that back in the day, it was almost a cost-saving measure.
Yeah.
You know?
2 less lugs.
Yeah, yeah. 2 less lugs times thousands of drums a year.
It adds up.
Yeah, maybe so.
Yeah.
But I'm a huge fan of the 5 lug thing. I really am.
I like it too.
I think they're easier to tune. I've heard people say the opposite, but I like the fewer lugs on a drum, the better for me.
Well, and on top of that, too, when you're talking about a die-cast hoop, you're getting, you know, tuning is going to be way more consistent anyway.
Yeah, it's very rigid.
So, you know, it's not like there's just going to be this big dip in the hoop like a cheap triple flange might.
Right.
So, you know, it's sort of a lame argument to say, I think factoring in die-cast hoops, it's almost a moot point. Yeah. But I always thought maybe cost saving, because
yeah, I would speculate that. I don't know that that's the case, but
It's a lot. It'd be a lot when you look at the number of drums a year.
Yeah.
So that's certainly possible.
So Paul, also, we've mentioned that in the past, Gretsch has gone through a few different ownership configurations, but the big one happened a couple years ago,
right?
Where now DW and Gretsch, I believe, aren't you guys the largest drum manufacturing consortium in the world?
You know, I don't know the answer to that question.
Yeah,
I don't know if we're the largest or not, because you got some pretty huge companies out there.
Yeah,
Yamaha and Pearl and Tama, people like that.
So, if you could explain to us in general, does DW wholly own Gretsch, or is it distribution?
DW, my understanding is that DW owns the rights to manufacture and market Gretsch drums. The Gretsch family still owns the name, and that's similar to the same ownership agreement that both Command and Fender had prior to DW.
Gotcha. Now, I want you to set every Gretsch drum player's mind at ease and tell them that you are still making drums the way that you've been making them forever.
Well, I don't know about forever, but I can tell you for about the last 19 years it's been the same.
Yeah, because, you know, immediately when that type of news comes out, you know, the alarmists throw their hands up. Oh, it's over now. This is the end of that. But we're here telling you straight from the horse's mouth that Gretsch drums are still Gretsch drums, and they're being made in the same recipe that everybody's grown to know and love.
Yeah, we're still made in the same place by the same people. And actually, I think of all the different ownerships we've had in the time I've been here, the DW people, it's great to finally be owned by a drum company, for one thing. And they're great people, and they totally get Gretsch.
Right, and it's the type of relationship that they let you guys, again, do what you do the way that you do it, and they don't necessarily enforce any sort of DW hand on the way of
manufacturing. Yeah, I mean, their intent, obviously, is not to have us build DW drums. They want us to build Gretsch drums.
Right.
And they get that. And, you know, they're there to help, and they have been a great help, actually.
Yeah.
That's great to hear. I know that, you know, by way of marketing and forward thinking, there couldn't be a better company to partner with. And on top of that, you know, need I remind you, a piano company owned Gretsch for a while, and it wasn't so great.
Right. You're dead on with DW in that they're very innovative people.
Yeah.
They certainly know what the heck they're doing. And it's great to be finally, you know, working with people that talk the same language.
That's great, man.
Yeah.
Love it.
Yeah. Paul, we've got a few questions we want to throw at you that have come to us from some of our listeners as well. And the new marketing campaign you got for the snare drums, the one, if you were going to go through and do that same test, what would be your favorite snare drum out of that bunch?
Well, you know, I got to say there's metal and there's wood. So I'd have to have two favorites.
Okay. Go for it.
I'm a huge fan when it comes to metal of the aluminum drums.
Amen.
Mm-hmm. They seem to have a lot of warmth, almost a woody warmth, and so I'm way into that. As far as wood goes, just give me a 5x14 8 lug Gretsch snare drum, and that's all I need.
Right on.
Cover a lot of ground with that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Something just hit my mind when we were talking about these drums. Of any of the endorsers or any of the even just customers that have asked you for some like crazy customization or just any kind of crazy modification, is there anything that sticks out in your mind where you're just like, what in the world am I doing?
Well, you know, Josh and I joke here quite a bit that, you know, if we were only drum consultants to give people advice, because you do see people order some crazy stuff. And, you know, drumming is such a beautiful thing in that there really is nothing that's wrong. You know what I mean? Like, whatever you want to play, we'll build it the way you want it because it's yours. Mm-hmm. You know, whether I think it's right or wrong has nothing to do with it. But we have seen some crazy things. mainly with, you know, bass drum depths, crazy positioning of either rail mounts or tom holders, and, you know,
just look sideways to you.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, a lot of time we, not a lot of time, but sometimes with the customized stuff, you do get people who dictate to you exactly what they want you to do to your drums, whether it's the right thing or not. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you have to work with that.
Right. Here's another one. Someone who's well versed in your recent offerings besides a USA Custom. He asks, if you had a USA Custom and a Brooklyn kit, both with die cast tubes, just for uniformity's sake, would you hear the difference?
I think you would.
You think so?
I do think you would. I think the USA Custom would be a little more focused, the tone, than the Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. And I've actually done that.
Right. I would assume so. Yeah. Yeah. Cool, man. That's good to know.
Yeah. So ask a couple of other questions as well from our listeners. How would one approach Gretsch for an endorsement?
Well, we have artist relations manager, mm-hmm. Andrew Shreve. He works out in California at the DW factory. Mm-hmm. So you would need to contact him. That would be the way.
Gotcha. And then, just out of curiosity, does Gretsch have different levels or tiers of endorsements?
Yeah, I believe we do. I'm not totally hip to what all those are, but I know there are, yeah.
Cool.
The other question was, what did Gretsch learn most from the 70s, 80s, 90s in terms of falling behind the Japanese companies in marketing, distribution, endorsements, and hardware?
Well, I think we learned we got our butt kicked.
Yeah.
You know, that's a difficult question to answer in that, you know, way predates me. I mean, in the 70s, I was on the road playing rock music, so... Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, clearly some design elements were very well thought out and functional, so you have to keep up with that.
Yeah. Well, you know, maybe this might help answer that. And you look at in 2000 to 2003 or 4, that's when we really updated our hardware to at least what was going on at that time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, since then, you know, some of the things we've tried to do in the last 5 or 6 years is further update some of the other stuff. You know, the old Gretsch claw hook chewed up bass drum hoops for about 70 years.
Right.
You'd change your drum head and the claw hook had eaten the thing up. So, you know, we did a die cast claw hook. You know, we re-engineered the micro-sensitive throw off. Because everybody that had a drum from the 60s, the handle was broken off. So, you know, we wanted to bring that throw off back, and it's a great throw off. We redid the tom brackets. We got the 4825 diamond plate, which has the same shape of the old classic one, but has all the modern functionality.
And same footprint, like grip hole same and footprint. All that. Yeah, great. Yeah,
And actually, that bracket will fit either hole pattern of the floor tom legs or floor tom brackets Gretsch has used.
Oh, so, nice. Yeah. So now I hear from reputable sources you're a player at heart and still do that quite a bit.
Yeah.
Paul has a serious background in education and always been a player as well as working here. What are you playing right now as far as
drum wise?
Yeah, drum wise. What's your go-to kit?
My go-to kit is it's a 80s burn orange. It's 22, 12, 14, and a 15.
All right.
And a 5x14 8-lug snare drum. And I've been gigging on that kit pretty consistently for about the last 10 years.
Mm-hmm. And then you have a beautiful, as we've seen on your computer models, 40s.
Yeah, I've got a 1947 3-ply kit, which I bought about 6 years ago on eBay for $900. And it was really in horrible shape. But it took a few months fixing it up here, of course. And after I had it together, I was just blown away by the sound of that kit. And that's really what led me into developing the Broadcaster series of 3-ply drums.
Good stuff, man. Those new ones sound fantastic, too. So
Yeah, so I mean that's good little bit of nugget for everybody to know that that's in direct response to the creation of the Broadcaster series.
Yeah, yeah, I bought that kit and I was just hooked on 3-ply.
Yeah, that's amazing. So now, if somebody wanted to get a job here at Gretsch, in the factory with you, is there any particular kind of, like, aside from drumming background, any kind of woodworking background or anything that you look for?
Well, you know, it can be helpful, and it also can be a hindrance. Yeah, to be quite honest, you know?
Yeah.
If somebody has, I had a guy one time that worked in the wood shop, and he was great, and he came from, his family owned a business that made furniture. He was fantastic. I've had other people that came with woodworking experience, and it really wasn't the same kind of woodworking, you know, like a carpenter, a Finnish carpenter. Well, right. Maybe he wasn't suited. I'm not saying that all Finnish carpenters wouldn't be. They might be great. But this particular dude, it just wasn't suited for him. Mm-hmm. So there's a yes and a no with that, you know.
Paul, anything else you want to add to this as far as like anything that you would like to?
I thought about this earlier. We were talking about your employees.
Uh-huh.
And I want to make it really clear how everyone here is so amazingly nice and accommodating, and I think that certainly speaks to you. But
that's enough to get on your nerves, isn't it?
Man, it was just, we're walking through and people going out of their way, you know, to say, hey, how you doing, or letting. I just think, man, that just adds to the whole vibe.
Yeah.
And I certainly credit you for your creating that environment. But man, this is a family thing, man. It's close.
What is it? The most important thing about this place is the people.
It's amazing.
And yeah. I try to think that every day because it's absolutely true.
And yeah. they're just quality people, and I think that in turn is putting out quality product. If you have quality people who all have the same vision, and it's really refreshing to witness that, man. I think that was really cool.
You know, there was also one other quick thing that blew my mind when we were taking the tour. Paul, would you tell the listeners right now what the current ratio of lacquer finishes versus wrap finishes are leaving the factory?
Yeah, we do about 45% lacquer and about 55% nitron. And that does fluctuate from month to month. And, you know, that's where we're at today. A month from now, it could be flipped. Mm-hmm. But in general, you know, it's almost half and half. When I started here years ago, it was 85% lacquer and 15% nitron. So that has certainly changed over the years.
But do you think it's the type of thing where people are also feeling like that wraps are a little bit more husky, a little more durable, where they don't get
Yeah, generally, for some reason, and I don't understand this, but a lot of people think that lacquer kits are going to get destroyed on a gig.
Yeah.
And I'm not the kind of guy that... No, my lacquer kit is always going on the gig, and if it gets scratched, well, guess what? It's a good thing.
Right.
It's mojo. It's whatever. It's a, you know.
Yeah.
I think the wrap thing, too, you know, I mean, clearly vintage drums have become far more popular again, and that look.
Well,
so
yeah.
There's some of that, too.
And likewise, I mean, if you look at, like, the Gretsch 64 catalog or something, they might have had 6 wraps.
Right.
Right. And just the explosion in that whole industry that makes the wrap, you can get anything in the world today, printed, whatever, on it. So you know, part of it is that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, another thing came to mind I wanted to ask you. If you could clarify, what are the differences between a USA Custom and a Maple Renown, aside from the Customs being made here and the Maple Renowns being made?
Well, it's a different shell.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
What's the composition of the Renown shell?
Well, you know, I believe the Renown is a 7-ply shell.
Okay.
Whereas the and I could be wrong on that, but I'm pretty certain. And you know, the USA Custom is the same old shell we've used forever. Other than that, there are subtle differences. Obviously, the edges are done slightly different than we do our edges. It's the same 30-degree edge, but they're two different, entirely different processes. And that's true of the whole production, where those drums might be made in a little bit more of a assembly line environment than we have here.
Right. And I would assume that the finish is probably not nitrocellulose lacquer.
No, I'm pretty certain it's not. It's poly, I believe.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Okay. So back to what I was going to ask you a second before when we were starting to kind of wrap up some things. Is there anything else that we didn't ask you or anything that you might have heard that could possibly be a misconception or something that you would like to clear up, or just something in general that you'd like to tell folks about Gretsch?
Well, you know, that's a great question. But I can just, when I start talking about Gretsch, I just, you know, I'm just happy to be here. To be honest with you, it's a great place to work. And to be able to have done this for the last almost 19 years is, it's just a pleasure. I get up every morning and I'm going to make the donuts, man. Early.
Yeah.
It's not like I have to motivate myself to get out of bed in the morning.
I was going to say to actually testify to that, he texted us at 6 a.m. this morning. So yeah, that's great, man.
And you know, despite what happens during the course of a day, good, bad, indifferent, whatever, you know, at the end of the day, you've built a drum set for somebody, and you know that end user is going to dig it, and that's gratifying, and I think all the people here feel that.
Good stuff,
man. That's fantastic.
Yeah. Hey, real quick, I'd be remiss in not thanking Paul and I's mutual friend Randy Doris for helping this all come together. He was really, really instrumental in putting us together, and I just wanted to give a shout out to that fine young man, or whatever he is, old man.
Yeah, hey, Randy.
All right. Well, folks, we hope you enjoyed this. I'll tell you, we had an absolute blast coming down here and meeting with Paul and touring the factory, and he was gracious enough to sit down with us for this past hour. It's been great.
I love it, man. Thank you so much, Paul.
Thank you guys for coming. I've really enjoyed having you.
Oh, man. We'll come down every week, man, if you like. All right, folks, thanks again for tuning in to the Drummer's Weekly Groovecast. We really appreciate it. As always, you can catch us every Monday, brand new episode posted. You can catch us on iTunes, Google Play Podcasts, Stitcher, Podbean, all your favorite podcast apps. And until next Monday, we'll see you then.
Bye, Gretsch.
Say bye to him, Paul.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
No, buy it. Purchase it.
What a great guy. That Paul Cooper down at Gretsch is something else. I really hope you guys enjoyed this show as much as we enjoyed bringing it to you. It was an absolute gas. And like I alluded to at the beginning of the show at the intro, there are a host of pictures that we were allowed to take, and they will be published on our Facebook page. So by the time you're listening to this, if you want to get a good look at some of these different things that we were talking about, like, for example, the drill press that I was literally gushing over, crazy, I know, but I mean, there's just magic, man. That drill press drilled Art Blakey's drums, Elvin Jones, Tony Williams, Vinnie Colaiuta. The drums that you own that have the Gretsch badge on them, they drill those drums as well. So you can see what I mean. Swing by our Facebook page, Drummers Weekly Groovecast, or as I say, facebook.com/Drummers Weekly Groovecast. You can always reach out and you can connect with us that way as well. And while we're on that topic, you can always tweet us at Twitter, twitter.com/DW Groovecast. And you can always email us at our traditional email account, which is drummersweeklygroovecast@gmail.com. All right. Just a couple of last-minute bits of housekeeping. Don't forget, swing by iTunes and leave us a review. We'll love you, love you, love you for it, and then we will reward you for it. We're going to do our first Drummers Weekly Groovecast contest. Say that about five times quickly. We're going to draw for that Peisty 20 Series 10-inch splash, and we're going to draw for a Gretsch drums t-shirt as well. So make sure you get in on that before it's too late. The drawing will be in mid-April, and everyone who has signed up on iTunes, including the ones that are already signed up right now, you are in the running for the drawing. You never know, John and I might decide to do a little Facebook Live drawing on that. We'll keep you up to date on it. We'll bug the crap out of you between now and then to sign up, so the updates will keep a coming. All right. It wouldn't be right if I didn't leave you with some more Gretsch drums. And this time around to finish out the show, is there a more quintessential Gretsch artist than the great Tony Williams? He had that just uber-recognizable Tony Williams yellow drum set. You know you're pretty good when somebody names a color after you, right? So what I decided to do, since, I mean, there's just a million different phenomenal tracks that Tony played on, I decided to do something just a little bit outside of the box. The track I'm going to play is entitled Liberty from the 1990 Native Heart release. This was part of the records and part of the time when Tony had his quintet with Mulgrew Miller, Billy Pierce, Wallace Roney, and Ira Coleman. And again, this is a drum solo entitled Liberty. Nothing but drums on here, nothing but Tony Williams on that great Tony Williams yellow Gretsch kit. Guys, thanks for listening. We do appreciate you. Subscribe to us today, and we will see you next Monday with a brand new show.